Fine. So yesterday, we finished dealing with what I think is the meta topic, which is, does the Torah specifically oppose daughters inheriting when they're sons or not? I said, once you get over that hurdle, so then you move to the next question, which is, okay, well then what mechanisms do we have at our disposal if in fact we want to create the functional equivalent of daughters inheriting? So conceptually speaking, I wanted to pick up with Din al-Khuta because it doesn't actually speak just to the question of daughters, but it speaks to a much broader question about the nature of Yerusha, so I thought this should go first. Because the local question interests me less, as opposed to, I mean, interests me a lot, but for our purposes, with the number of shiurim we actually have left this year, I have to be picky here. What I think you really need to ask is the question, what is the nature of Yerusha? So we've talked about this several times. So someone tell me, it is counted as a mitzvah, right, Yaakov? It's counted as a mitzvah. I'll look at this later. It's fun. It looks like a good, yeah. What type of mitzvah? So we've seen this several times. What type of mitzvah is it? Right? We've had basically two possibilities. I think now we can sharpen our understanding a little bit, right? Okay, so someone help me. Right? It is, if it's a mitzvah, what type of mitzvah is it? Yeah, Rami. What? I don't mean chok mishpah. That's not what I meant. We've talked about this before. Right? In what sense is it a mitzvah?
I didn't get the tax obligation to make sure that the money fits.
Well, okay. Okay. Try that again.
Sorry. Okay. So alternatively, what you might need is like, is this like a physical mitzvah? Or is this like a reflected in the laws of society? Or is this
right. So one formulation we had was that, look, this is not really a mitzvah in the classic sense, in the sense that it's something you have to do. It's just it's a default order. Now that's a bit too strong, but that is maybe one way of saying, right? It's a procedural mitzvah in which there isn't even maybe direct religious value in keeping it. It's a default, right? That's sort of a very weak formulation, right? Or you could say, no, it is actually a mitzvah for you to ensure that this happens, like in an active sense. And then we noted that within the Rambam, there's different formulations where in the Sefer HaMitzvah Zakatan, the Sefer HaChinuch also, they say who's ensuring? The mitzvah isn't on the person, the mitzvah is on Beis Din, because the person is dead, right? But you could have a weaker formulation. I already see where you're going, Ezra, which is who's going to ensure it, right? And that's why I think the Rambam and the Chinuch go in the direction of Beis Din, if it is a mitzvah of someone to ensure. But of course, there is a middle position, which is that, you know, something like it's a mitzvah for the person to not try to undermine the system in his life to allow it to happen or something like that. Yes, admittedly, it feels very weird. But I want to put a different spin on it. Yeah, Ezra?
Also, is there also the difference between the first and second formulation? Because there's a mandate on faith to uphold the law.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it is. Well, the difference, so that's why I'm going to put a different spin on it and see if this is helpful. There's another way of looking at this and saying, in the end of the day, is Yerusha, right, is Yerusha purely monetary? And in general, in monetary law, we have a lot more flexibility and we tend to view the halakha much more as a default than as an active obligation, right? Because in general, the number one rule in Dinei Mamonot is whatever you agree to, you agree to. And that's why you have radical formulations in the Yerushalmi in the context of Dinei Mamonot. We talked about this all the way at the beginning of the year in the context of Ezek Re'iyah and how big you have to build the walls and things like that, where this is the Yerushalmi's context to invoke Minhago Per Halacha. And the custom overrides the law. Right? Because at some level, Dinei Mamonot is not really law, you know, binding mitzvah law in the exact same sense, because it's so much about convention and agreement. So is Yerusha just like that? It belongs to the world of Dinei Mamonot, and therefore the active mitzvah value component is minimal to non-existent, probably not non-existent, but maybe minimal, right? Or do you say, look, I know that Yerusha manifests itself in Dine Mamonot, but as much as it's Dine Mamonot, it's also the world of mitzvah, of isurin, of ritual. The first formulation would give you a lot more latitude. The second formulation would give you a lot less latitude, right? And do you remember the formulation of the Chinuch, right? Do you remember the formulation of the Chinuch when he said, why does Yerusha work the way it does? Yavi, you remember the Chinuch? I didn't give it to you again. Remember Mitzvah Tav? He said that, why does Yerusha way that it works? Because God wants to remind you don't really have control, and therefore your son already is attached to you in a certain way, right? Meaning, the Chinuch seems to go in the direction that in addition to the Dini Mamonot, there's actually like a theological component that highlights that God doesn't want you to have control, right? The whole point is that there's a mitzvah at some level to relinquish control, right? And messing with that is problematic theologically. And again, this is in the Tamei mitzvah, right? But he said, at some level, the point is that you don't have control after death, and that's part of what Yerusha is. And this is not purely monetary. Yeah. Correct. Correct. It is a very weirdly formulated one.
Exceptions to the general rule. So things like if only in these ways, just like in general, you're allowed to, or there's the way that it works, but without God's any intervention, therefore we can imagine that God doesn't actually do it. Besides the couple cases which then were like corrected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I buy that. But I want to show you, I want to express this in two different ways, and then bring it back to the question of playing around with the laws of Yerusha for daughters. Okay? I know that some of you were struggling with this one, so maybe I'll start with this one. In general, when you make a condition, when you're making it, I know you're having trouble, so I'm going to go right to it, because, okay? When you make a condition, so, the Gemara has a series of rules called the Mishpatei HaTanayim, the rules of conditions. In order for a condition to work, you have to follow a certain procedural rules. For example, the one that Rami asked me, Tanai Kaful. What's a Tanai Kaful? Tanai Kaful, I think it was Rami, who's Ezra who asked me that. It was Ezra who asked me. Tanai Kaful, what's Tanai Kaful, Ezra, since I asked you? What does it literally mean?
Double condition.
So what does that mean?
So you
sit
like positive and negative.
Correct. Right? It's Michal Lava Shame, but you actually have to spell it out. Meaning, if I do X, then X, then Y will happen. If I don't do it, then this will happen, right? Tanai Kaful. If yes, yes. If no, no. There are other things you have to do in terms of the order, hang on them love, love code them lahain, right, which comes from verse. But there's all types of rules that are necessary in order for a condition to actually take effect. And this, the source for this in the Gemara is what's known as Tanai b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven.
From
Mishpatei HaTanayim. Correct. So, how do we know? So what's the case there? So Moshe says to... So what does he say?
Well, he said this, and I think it's important that he said not to, he's not the one who said it to B'nai Gad, he's to you.
No, he says it to, no, he says it to B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. He later says it to Yoshua. He reiterates it to Yoshua, but he says it to them too.
But isn't it important to mention that he had Yoshua was kind of the
one? Meaning, he's going to be the enforcer, but... Here, this is the psukim we derive it from. Vayomer Moshe levnei Gad levnei Reuven, hachichem yavol lemelchama v'atem teishu. Well, right, he criticizes them. Eventually, they come up with a condition. So what does he say? Vayomer aleihem Moshe im ta'atun edavar hazeh. If you do this, im teichal atzu levnei Hashem lemelchama, and you go, as you've said, to be the vanguard, and to fight ahead of the other Jews, and you take all of your men over the Yarden before God until God drives away the enemies. Then you'll be clear of your commitments to God and to man, and you will inherit this land on the Transjordan, the east side of the Jordan, before God. If you don't, then you've sinned to God. And you won't get the land. Right? And then, yes, he says to Yeshua, "Im yavu v'nei gad mei ruvei nitzchem v'nei ardein kol chaluzum v'chamal v'nei ha'chem v'nei ardu v'nei chem v'nei v'nei ardu 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 will inherit in the land of Israel like everybody else, right? So this is the source for many of the Mishnah, for the Mishnah they had to name. The positive, the negative, tonight, Kapul, yes, Yeshua is the enforcer here, you are correct. But this is the source for tonight, B'nai God of B'nai Ruvain, and Mishpate HaTanayim. And I gave you just a short piece from Ketubot, Dachayin Dalid. The Gemara says, Michti, Kol Tanai Me'echi Gamrinan. Where do we learn all rules of conditions from? Mi Tanai, B'nai God, B'nai Ruvain. From the conditions that Moshe stipulated to God and Ruvain. In the context of the Gemara, they're talking about whether you can do this through a shliach. Okay? Whether it has to be the type of thing that can be fulfilled by a shliach. There is an exception, however, that the Rashbam writes on Bava Batra Koflam and Zayin Amabet, which I gave you here, though, yes, you have the Gemara, but just to make sure you found it. Rashbam says, he's talking about a case. The Apple Gavdilian Gitten came along to Rabbi Meir, and he says, even though we paskin like Rabbi Meir, in the context of Gitten, the boy tonight kaful kedamar beperek nisha achso it control get begita deshkemer rabbechulei. Even though we rule like Rabbi Meir, that holds that we need the mishpatei tanayim, all the rules in order to make stipulations in the context of getin and kiddushin. Hani milei leinyan getin vekiddushin who to be inan tonight kaful echatchila l'rafcha demelta. That's only in the case of yisurin of getin and kiddushin that you need double tanayim. But when it comes to monetary law, lo be'inan tanai kaful. You do not need all the rules of tanaim. All you need to do is make your position clear. As the Rashbam says, that when it comes to monetary law, you don't need any formalities by conditions. All you need to do is make it clear what you mean. As long as it's clear, it's binding. And so if I say I will give Yaakov a piece of land if
he gives you a land.
Sure, whatever. He does well enough in the Bechina that I'm not giving you the end of the year. But if I was, fine, right? Right? You know, we're very, very fancy here at Migdal, right? You get 100 on the Bechina and, you know, we give you a house, right? You know, like, very fancy. Yaakov's like, that'd be good. What? That is probably true regardless of whether I was giving you a house. I would probably give a hard test. That's probably true. Though from what you tell me, I could probably afford to buy a house in Milwaukee as a present. You know, at least the teardowns, whatever.
Yeah, another one.
Right, you told me it was like $19,000 or something like that.
And on this one,
still a bit pricey for 100 on a test, but you know.
This was probably a bit less, though.
Less?
Well, because of the whole of this room. And it's not a big one.
It's like a 1-4 house.
It's like a 1-4 ranch house. With a whole of this room. It's pretty cool.
So it goes less than 19,000?
Well, I don't think they're going to try to sell it. I think they just go to the top down.
Okay, so, anyways, fine. Someone want to tell me what the problem is with the Rashbam, though. What's the problem with the Rashbam? There's a glaring problem with the Rashbam. The Rashbam claim that all the rules that we have about how you make it tonight only apply in Dittin and Kiddushin, but not in monetary law. What is the glaring issue? What's the glaring issue here? There's a bigger issue. I want broad, yeah. Yeah, meaning the source for all rules of Tanaim is Nachal, right? Is Yerusha, right? That is the source for everything, which is not a case of Gittin, it's not a case of Kiddushin, and yet that is the source for all the rules. And so here he comes and he says, I learned from the case of Yerusha that there's all these formalities you have to follow if you want to make a condition and it to be binding. And from here we learn that it only applies in Gittin and Kiddushin and the like, but not in monetary law. So Ezra asked the obvious question, Mapita. Inheritance is monetary law. So good, what's the answer? It's not, right? The obvious answer is it's not.
What about the economic
summary? Wait, one second. Let's just spell this out, right? But the obvious answer is that Yerusha, as much as we think of it as monetary, is not purely monetary, right? There is a ritual component. There's a mitzvah component, and that's why you can't just treat it like any other monetary law where you don't need conditions. Right? Now, if you wanted to be very nitpicky, you could say, well, that maybe doesn't prove it. Maybe Yerusha in general is purely monetary, but Yerusha in of the land of Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah component, right? Which is what they're talking about. You could do that. Right? But there's a very plausible read here to say that no, what we learn from the fact that Mishpat HaTanaim applies, in fact, is derived from Dine Yerusha, even though according to Rashbam, Dine monetary law doesn't need the Mishpat HaTanaim, that Yerusha is more than just monetary law. It's a mitzvah, it's ritual, it's Isurin. Yes, Ali.
Oh, yeah, so what about the case that the Gemara brings about a man who wants to but not provide her.
So we say that doesn't work. That's even worse. That's matna mashav katuv batera.
But what about in terms of providing her food,
would
you call that
voluntary? So that's an interesting case because that seems to be a quality in the marriage, right? And that's why it's also an interesting case where at some level you would think maybe it is, but on the other hand, the problem is the type of kedushin you're making, right? But you're right. It's another case where you really have to analyze to the extent to which the commitments to a spouse are purely monetary. Yes. So this is my first piece of evidence that that Yerusha isn't purely monetary. Now, yes, Rami is correct that right, the Rashbam in this sense, I just give you the Rashbam because he's very clear in this way, but yeah, he's really relating to a machloket, as I put it here in Bava Metziat Tzadi Yalid, we'll just read it now, right, where Matnesh Shomer Chinam, this is the example I gave yesterday to Avi, right, was Matnesh Shomer Chinam Liot Patur Mishvua, that despite the fact that the Torah said default for all the Shomrim, we can change that. We can say that a Shomer Chinam will not have to take a vow. Vashoel Yod Patur Milashalem, or that a Shoel, who normally is obligated for everything, a lender, a borrower, is not going to be obligated to anything. No Sezachar Vasocher, a paid guardian, or a renter. Yod Patur Mishvua Milashalem. But in general, if you make it tonight against the Torah, right, it doesn't work. The call tonight, Shiesh Mahaseh Betzilato, tonight Batel, Koshev Shalokaim, Betzavo, Vinimo Betzilato, tonight Kayam. Okay, we don't need that for right now. The Gemara says, Amai, Mahatam, Vashiko, Torahu, why is it that you can make these conditions on Shomrim? The call Mahatam, Mashakadu, Betzarat, no Batel, isn't any condition made against the Torah invalid? The Gemara says, Amani, Rabiudi, that should be who to Domer, Vidavar Shabimon, tonight Kayam. And when it comes to money, you can make such conditions. Titania, Ha'omer li sharei mikudesh amanach ein lecha alai sher kseh dun ha'rezen mikudesh. It is no batel, divri Rabbi Meir. Domer, v'davar shabon, t'no kayam. Right, the Rabbi Meir says, you cannot make the conditions like that by kiddushin, but Rabbi Yehuda says you can. And again, as Ellie notes, you have to figure out what's the dini mamano component there, what are they really arguing about? Give it. 100%. But this is my first piece of evidence that Dine mamana, that Yerusha isn't pure Dine mamana. It's not pure Dine mamana. Right? There is a mitzvah component, and that's why it can be the paradigm for the case of Tanayim, even though Tanayim doesn't apply normally by Dine mamana. Okay? Point two. Look at the Rambam here. The Rambam says, "Ein adam yachol lahorish l'mi she'ena ro'i liyarsho, v'lo la'akor yirusha min hayoreish af al pi shezeh mamonu." The Rambam says, you cannot, and this is what I gave you in Kof Lamed, but we're going to come back to it, but for now I'll just give you the summary of the Rambam, but hopefully you got to see the Gemara. The Rambam paskins, you cannot give Yerusha to someone who is not an heir, nor can you uproot your inheritance from an heir. Even though, at first glance, it's a monetary law. Why? It teaches you that nachalot can't be changed, and conditions don't work. Whether ben bechtav ben balpeh ben bebet ben bechtav en omoil, it doesn't matter. If he's healthy, if he's dying, whether you wrote it down, whether it was verbal, doesn't matter. And then in the Tshuva of Rambam, he says, "Teda lama nishenu tanai Yerusha mishar tanai. Why is this different from other conditions? Lefi shenemar beparshat nachalot vaytalev neisrael uchukat mishpat. Because the Torah says it should be a law. A Torah kibida." Al Yerusha Sheyin Ho Keseda. That the Torah actually cares that it follows this order. The Chaimvan De Kaimalon Shetnai Yerusha Shel Torah Eino Moil. The Chachamim Asu Chizik L'Devarim Geshel Torah. Yerusha Dishter Lo Amar Klum Ela Yirach. And therefore, if you make conditions, right, it doesn't work because the Torah prevents you. The rabbis prevent you. So what does the Rambam tell you? Right, very clearly. Why? You can't make conditions to take away the Yerusha, or at least fully, or give it to... Why not?
Because it's like not
yours to give away. Well, that's not exactly what he says, right? I mean, he doesn't go all the way in the direction of saying that it's not yours to give away, it's fully mitzvah. He says it is mamon, but it has a non-monetary component, because in addition to it just being monetary law, which would be more malleable... God called it chukah. God said, I want it done this way. So this is the second piece of evidence where the Rambam says that, yeah, the reason that you are limited in what you're allowed to do with Yerusha is because it's not just monetary. Right? There's something else going on. There's some mitzvah component. Okay? Now, with that... And again, I really just wanted, you know, I want to give you the basic contours of these issues. I don't want to overburden you with it, and that's why most of what I gave you here is an English summary. But I think that this question is very important to understand the issue of whether we can just, quote-unquote, solve our limitations, you know, our what we want to do with Yerusha through the mechanism of Dina de Malchuta Dina. Okay? Because this was one of the solutions that was proposed. So, as we said, you can't just make a condition that your wife shouldn't marry, your daughter shouldn't marry, because as we just saw, there are these limitations that make it, as Ray Jackson nicely summarizes here what we just saw, which is, that Yerusha isn't just monetary. It has an element of chukat mishpat. Okay. But he doesn't make this connection explicit, but I think it's very important, which is, okay, you can't make conditions, but what about Dina de Malchuta Dina? What if we say, well, secular law says the daughter is doing it. Can I just rely on that? So you tell me, what does it depend on? Well, not directly, right? I mean, you're not making a decision. You're just letting the law take its natural course. But conceptually, what does it depend on?
Oh, they're not allowed to go again.
Okay, so let's... Okay, let's just... The Rajba was asked this question, okay?
The Rambam said they're not supposed to go against the error.
Good. So the Rajba, and again, I gave you the English summary, but the Rajba was asked this question. The Rajba was asked whether... you could use Dina de Malchuta in a case of Yerusha. Okay? He was asked, Shenish'al alechah shemitah bito v'tavat chatno berkata goyim sheyachshu l'kol andunya v'tana sh'aval pi sh'ni yishol aval yoresh yishto kivan sh'kol yodim sh'imalchu b'nina goyim harei kol nosei yisha sham ki'ilu hitnu kein. So the Rabbi said, here's what happened, and Reb Jasher gives you the summary, but basically, in halacha, a husband inherits from his wife. But in his, where the Rabbi was living in Spain, the law was that dowries went back to, went back to the family. Okay? So he was asked whether the fact that that was the law meant that you could take it as a condition, that everyone understood when they got married, despite the fact that al-pi halakha, a husband inherits from his wife. In this case, the dowry would not be inherited by the husband. It would go to the family of the wife because that was the law. The Rajba answered, no. Right? Linho ken ibnashu mishpana goyim be'emet nira li da'asur. That is forbidden. Lefi shuhu mechaker goyim, because you're imitating the non-Jews. The doshes, he's ira torah lefnehem v'lo lefne goyim. The abo bishnei shneem ro tzimbekash. He said, this is the prohibition of following the non-Jewish law. And even if both of them want it, hu davar shebim mamon, and you would say, isn't it monetary? And by monetary law, we both want it. We want to follow it. What's the problem? Shelohinicha Torah et ha'am shehula nachala lo al ritzonan shakiru chukoda goyim v'zanein. We don't let you use this monetary case as a way of honoring the non-Jewish law. V'lo afil la'mod v'zanein l'din afil v'davar z'anein g'dinei Yisrael. And he says, skipping down, Chas v'shalom v'lam kadosh l'nho kacha. God forbid you should do this. The kol shegim el yosivu lachto lachkor nachala somecha meshenet kaneh ratzut hazeh. And definitely you're going to uproot the weak connections we have to the laws of Yerusha. Elam mapil chomorat terav oker shorich l'anach. You're destroying the walls of Torah. You're uprooting it. V'atorah miyado tevakesh. And anyone relies on Dinan Malchuta is a thief. Vafilu Gzela Yashiv Rasha Mikri. Vechalila Lote Kazot Yisrael Chas Vishalom Shema Tachkora Torah Sakaliyam. God forbid you should do this, the Torah will put on sackcloth. That's one Shuvat HaRashba. The second Shuvat HaRashba, both these according to Beis Yosef, he says, Da shelo amru ela bin ma'id ikar mona de malchus varm shein midine ha malchus da aval dinim she dinam berkaor in lish bin emucha lakaor janim ma'atzman kemo shim tu b'sivrei dayanim she im iya to omer ken batal tachas v'shalom dine Yisrael. His second claim is that dine de malchuta only applies to rules that affect the king, the government, but not internal judgments between Jews that don't affect the government. Now, let's tease out both of these. The second one, does it tell you anything about Yerusha per se? No, right? Meaning that the Rajba is saying that even in monetary law, even when purely monetary law, Dinan Malchusa is not binding if it doesn't affect the government whatsoever, it's just your internal dealings with other Jews. But what about his first tshuva? God forbid, you're uprooting the Torah, right? You're uprooting the essence of the Torah. What is, right? What does he seem to be getting at in that case?
I would say general religious concerns.
So I think that's the key word, is that in the second tshuva he has a broad claim, which is that Din HaMalchus never applies when it's monetary and only Jews are involved. But his first tshuva, where he goes on, you're uprooting the Torah, it's heretical, right? Even though you agreed to it, what is he really saying? Or what does he sound like he's saying? That Yerusha isn't just monetary. Right? At some level, to just follow the law of the land, it's not just that you're not bound to it, but it's an affront to the Torah. Now, why would he say something like that? Again, I think it comes down to what we've been saying, is that, in general, by dina de malchut adina, by pure monetary law, it's one thing to say by monetary law that there's a convention, but if something has a ritual component to it, right, the Rambam's second claim is even by monetary law, when it's just Jew to Jew, you should follow Torah law. But his first one, where he talks about religion, talks about uprooting the Torah, I think he may be motivated by something else, which is this belief that dina de malchut works by monetary laws, but it can't be introduced when something is ritual, right? When there's a mitzvah component to it. And even if the Rashba is not saying that, I'm saying it, right? That following what we've been saying, by conditions, I think you could argue that another reason that Dina Malchuta shouldn't work is because Dina Malchuta is usually limited to, now, it's the Sman notes that these aren't the exact same formulation. Meaning, some of them, first, have noted the Rashba seems to be making two different arguments. Right? And I think these are the two arguments, right? One is a claim that all, even by monetary law, inter-Jewish laws, where you don't, inter-Jewish cases, you don't deal with Din Malchuta. But his second one, I think, is a religious argument, which is that Yerusha is more than just Dinei Mamonot. Yerusha is also a mitzvah, and by mitzvah, just like you wouldn't tell someone that, you know, you don't keep Shabbat because of Dina Malchuta. So ignoring Dina Yerusha is really the same thing, because there's a mitzvah component. Now this halacha is quoted by the Rama, more mundane version of it. Okay. So with that in the background, then you got to say, okay, so is this a potential solution? So based on the Rashba, what would you say? Right, probably not, right? However, despite that, you could either, argue on the Rashba, or you could try to sort of come up with a deal that would limit the application of this Rashba. So I gave you here, look towards the end, the end of the first page. He says, it's clear from the Rashba that if one dies intestate, meaning without having made a will, halacha, not civil law, must control the distribution of his assets. Moshe Feinstein, however, argues that a will drafted in compliance with civil law is halachically valid, and that the heirs as set forth in the will are not guilty of theft, even if they do not inherit according to halacha. Ramosha writes that since a will deals with a gift to made after death of the testator, it would seem that such a gift is not valid in the eyes of Jewish law. This is because there is no recognition under Jewish law of kinyan, of transfer of title after death, because the assets involved no longer belong to the testator. Upon death, halachic heirs inherit immediately. Nevertheless, according to the law of the land, one may transfer property after death, even though it no longer belongs to the testator. Ramosha states, it appears, according to my humble opinion, a secular will of this kind, which will definitely be put into effect by the authorities of the country in which he resides, does not need a kinyan, for is no greater kinyan than that effectuated by the civil law. Therefore, since a kinyan is not necessary, the legatees of the secular law are halakhically entitled to the property left to them in the will and not the halakhic heirs. And this is a significant basis for the practice of observant Jews in the country, this country, United States, to rely on these types of secular wills. But Rav Moshe's ruling met with much opposition. Dayan Arya Leib Gronas of the London Benjamin wrote a thorough critique of Rabbi Feinstein's ruling. The authorities who concur with Dayan Gronas include Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, Rav Avil Cohen, Rav Ezra Batri, Rav Herschel Schechter, Rav Mordechai Willick. Furthermore, several classical commentators disagree with Rav Moshe, including the Chatam Sofer, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, Rav Chaim Elazar Gudensky. All of these authorities reject the conclusion of Rav Moshe and would not sanction the use of a secular will without supplements, such as Star Chatzizachar that we'll get to later. Why not? So Dayan Gronas cites a passage from the Gemara that seems to clearly disprove Rav Moshe's contention. The Gemara teaches that when there is a conflict between an individual's directive and God's directive prevails. For example, if one declares that when a firstborn animal will be born, this will be a karban olah, Hashem's directive that the animal be designated as a bechor at birth prevails over this individual's desire. Similarly, Dayan Gronas argues, if one stipulates that at death, one's assets belong to a non-halachic heir, Hashem's directive that at death, the assets belong to the halachic heir prevails. Rav Schechter remarked that he finds this proof particularly convincing. Dayan Grunfeld of the London Beis Din presents another disproof of Rav Moshe Feinstein's theory. He quotes the Sefer HaChinuch that we saw. And here's the translation. Hashem teaches that the right of the heir to the hereditary estate is inexorably tied to the estate. And as soon as the individual transmits the inheritance, dies, the right to the inheritance immediately rests on the heirs. Recording on my phone, but you can read it if you would like. I sent it to you. The right to the inheritance immediately. The relationship of the person who transmits the inheritance to the heir is such that the bodies of two persons are glued together, that what emanates from one immediately reaches the other. Hence, Chazal teach that if an individual states that one may not inherit me or my daughter shall inherit me in a case where there is a son, or the testator makes any similar conditions which contradict the Jewish law of inheritance, these stipulations are entirely invalid. One cannot uproot the words of Hashem, who enjoined the halachic heir inherits the one who transmits the inheritance. As explained in the Sefer HaChinuch, as soon as a person dies, his halachic heirs automatically possess title to the inheritance without any interruption. From a halachic perspective, this appears to preclude civil authorities from making gifts on behalf of the deceased. Since immediately at the time of death, an estate belongs to the halachic heirs, a kinyan cannot be enacted on behalf of the deceased, as the estate no longer belongs to him. Therefore, one cannot empower anyone, not even a governmental authority, to distribute his property in contradiction to halacha. If an individual signs a secular will without an effective halachic supplement, he's effectively directing the civil authorities to improperly take assets from his halachic heirs. Now, there's a lot going on there, and a lot of things in Din Malchuta, but let me make a broad point that comes out to me from this sugya. Right? Like I said, I'm trying to just give you the overview, and that's why, are there nuances? Of course there are nuances, but it seems to me, if you ask me, what is the major machlokas between Rav Moshe, right, who says, look, yeah, Dina Machutza doesn't directly work, but like, if you write a will and say, you know, well, I want everything to just go according to the law, then it does work, meaning, Rav Moshe, at some level, what is he really saying? I think.
You have to have this active recognition of business and not just,
but, I mean, what is he doing? What allows Rav Moshe to go in that direction, I think?
Maybe just there's an implicit recognition of that the state has the power.
Sure, but why does the state have the power? But in the end of the day, how is Rav Moshe treating Yerusha? I think. Like Dini Mamano. Right? So, okay. The Rajba has one formulation where even if it's Dine Mamanot, it doesn't apply. Because if you leave your inheritance without a will, so halacha takes over. But Rav Moshe says, but if I write a will and say that I wanted to follow the law, so then I've explicitly stated that I'm following the Machut, and that's great. Maybe even according to the Rajba. Right? Now, I don't think that's true according to the Rajba, but even if it's true according to the Rajba, it's only true according to the second formulation from the Rajba, which is that even if it is Dine Mamanot, right? So, you know, it's inter-Jewish, but then if you make conditions, maybe you can play with it. But if you take the first formulation of the Rashi more seriously, that no, the Torah wants you to do this, meaning this isn't purely monetary. There's a, again, The exact formulation we can play with. But it's not purely monetary. There's a mitzvah component. The Torah wants you to relinquish control. Right? There's a religious value here in Yerusha following its normal way in which the father gives up his rights to a certain level and lets things take his course. If you think that that's actively what the Torah wants, there's a mitzvah component. The Torah wants you to do that. And that's, right, Diane Grunfield's formulation, right, from the Chinuch. That the Torah wants you to relinquish rights. And in that, to that extent, what did it do? Right, now there's a monetary way that God did that, which is that he gives your heirs right even when you're alive. Right? Because he wants you to relinquish control, right? Again, you can come at it from different formulations. You can say that it's a mitzvah, which seems to be what comes from the Rambam. You can say that it's monetary, but in a unique sense. It's a monetary not in that I'm giving it, but in a monetary sense that God created like metaphysical monetary realities, which seems to be sort of what the Chinuch is getting at, right? That the Torah wants your heirs to have it, and therefore, even in your lifetime, they sort of own it. However you want to do it, the point is, it's not merely monetary. It's either monetary with God setting certain rules and saying this isn't just monetary in the way normal monetary things is, that all I care is what deals you make, right? Or you say, no, it's a mitzvah component. Whatever formulation you want to take, I think what the reason that Rav Moshe's tshuva was met with so much opposition was because most posts can believe that Yerusha isn't purely monetary, or at least not merely monetary, right? It's monetary with a mitzvah component. It's monetary with God expressing preference that things actually follow this. It's God showing a preference for you relinquishing rights after you die. Whatever you want to say, the point is it's not just a deal. It's not just a present. It's not just money, right? There's something else here, and that prevents you from relying straight on Din Malchuta. Therefore, the first, now, like I said, this year is a much broader thing about Yerusha, but just to tie it in, okay? Oh, yeah, that's fine. Say what you want to do and then I'll tie it in. Go ahead. Yeah, you could put it that way also, right? Oh, but again, both the son and the daughter, right, at some level they need to, right, respect the Torah. Where is the page? One second. So you could, right, but it's problematic because, in general, we don't follow Din Malchus in those cases, right? That's the problem. You could, but it's hard. Good. So like I said, so I didn't want to get into it too deep, right? So look, there were some people who wanted to suggest that the solution we should use for daughters Yerusha is Din Malchus. Let me just spell it out, okay? So, for example, the one that's often quoted is Rabbi Yirmiya of Moraganto. I'm not really sure I pronounced that right, but that's what everybody quotes, okay? And he paskin should magia chelek levnot bedin Torah levidin machut adina. Now, so a reverse doctrine says in Israel that might not work because Din Malchuta works differently in Israel. And that's a story for another time, which I can't really get into. I don't want to get into that rabbit hole. But there were these people who did believe it worked. But to give you some formulations of why people pushed back. One second. This is from the Rav Palim. Um, So he says, right, you don't say din malchuta unless it's something for the king, right? He focused on that. And this is in the Rapalim, this is Eliezer. There is a different formulation, okay, which Ezra is getting into, and maybe I'll come back to it, which is, okay, maybe the daughter doesn't really inherit, but maybe if the secular authorities give the property to the daughter, so now it's not really a question of whether she inherited it, it's a question of whether she has to give it back to the sons, right? And maybe she could say, sure, I'll give it back to you, but first cut a deal with me, right? Right? In order for me to... What? I understand, right? So there were some poskim who said, look, maybe, right? So maybe she shouldn't have inherited, but if the government ends up giving it to her, so she can demand, that in order to sign away her rights that the government gave her, that the brothers make a deal and give her something in return, right? So there were a lot who felt that you could do that. Right? So therefore, so for example, the Rav Paulin quotes, even though everyone disagreed with Yirmiyah me, whatever, that Dina Malchuta lets daughters inherit, Rav Yechiel Basan said that Svir Leidena Bor Chayavot Lachzor Lachtov Oto Achelek Al Shem Vanim Ha'ashod Be'emet, that if it managed to get to the daughters, they don't just have to give up their rights to it. And if the son, let's say, says, look, the government gave it to you, I want it back, and not only do I want you to give it to me, but like, I want the government to recognize it, so like, you have to sign away your rights in court, so that you have to give me the deed, then the post comes out, even if we didn't like that it happened, the daughter doesn't have to do that. The son has to... Right, make it worth the daughter's time to give up the deed. And Acharim, however, some didn't even accept that. The Marimat argued, and he says, "Mechayevet abat lasso." The daughter has to give up her rights without demanding anything because she had no rights to it to begin with. So you do get these middle positions, right? You have those who said Dina Malchuta works straight. Then you had some who said, "Look, Dina Malchuta doesn't work, but if through Dina Malchuta the daughter ended up getting it, the daughter can demand something in return to give the property back to the rightful heirs." And then you have some, like Mari Mata, that might be done. If the daughter didn't deserve to get it, then she doesn't deserve the right to force the brothers to make it worth her while. And therefore, the Rav Paulin says there are three shita. This Rav Yirmiyah who says that Dina Malchuta is enough to dictate how Yerusha should go by itself. The Mari Basan who says that the daughter doesn't inherit anything, but if she did manage to get something through Dina Malchuta, she can then demand that the brothers make it worth their while before she gives the Yerusha. And then the Mari Mad who says no, she has no right to it, and therefore she has to give it away for free. And then all the posts can argue about which one. We passed in like, v'chulei. But I think what really is going on in the background here is this question, right? If you think that this is really about mitzvah, then obviously din malchuta doesn't work. And if you think it's like pure mitzvah, right? Meaning this could be a local machlokas of how you understand din malchuta, but it also seems to be cutting at the heart of Yerusha. Right, the more you view this as a mitzvah, the more you're going to say, Mapitam, I don't care what the government did. You have a mitzvah to do this. There's a mitzvah for the sons to inherit and the daughters not to inherit. This is how the Torah wants it. You can't rely on Dina Malchuta to do it. You can't even ask for money in return, right? This is what the Torah wanted you to do. Who are you to say, well, the government, the secular government did something else? In the end of the day, there's a mitzvah, right? The way the Rav Paulin says is at some level the Marimat makes sense because it's a Shavat Aveda. The secular government may think the daughter deserves it, but she doesn't. So it's a Shavat Aveda. She has a mitzvah to give it back to her brother. But if you think that Dina Malchuta straight is enough, you're viewing this in monetary terms. In the middle, I really don't know what to tell you. Right? I don't really know what to tell you. Meaning, is that because they view it as somewhere in between, or is it simply the fact that, yes, the daughter has to give it to the brother, but the daughter doesn't have to give over a deed? That's already above and beyond, and therefore she can demand money for that, right? Who knows, right? And that's how you find in certain people. So like the Mara al-Fandari says, yeah, of course the daughters have to give the property to the sons, but they're only chayav to be passive. You're now asking them to do something, like sign papers. Now you're asking them to do something. They're allowed to ask for a salary. So that may just be a very localized claim. But what really does surprise me is that as much as you get this very endless discussion about Din Malchuta, to me, the question of whether Din Malchuta is a good enough reason to give it to the daughter, again, for me, really comes down to this question, to what extent you think this is a mitzvah, and to what extent you think it's mere Dinei Mamonot. Right? Once you talk about mitzvah, so obviously Din Malchuta is not going to help you, right? Even with a will, the more you think about this in pure mitzvah terms, or heavily mitzvah terms as well, right? You're going to expect people to follow what the Torah says, regardless of what the law of the land is. So that's what I have to add to this discussion. And at the end of the day, I do think that the majority view is that Din Malchuta, as right, Jasper summarizes, most poskim don't like this idea that Din Malchuta is enough to give it to the daughter. That can't be their solution to all problems. Again, there's these technical machlokot, like if the government gave it to the daughter and now the son wants the deed and not just the property befoal, does the daughter have to give up her rights to the deed for free, or can she demand something in return? Okay, if we were giving a halach l'maisis here, right, we could spend more time on that. I don't want to spend forever fleshing out every detail, but I do want you to understand, right, where the broader issues come from. But as Rabbi Jasker very nicely summarizes, most poskim really didn't like Ramosha's solution, and therefore did not suffice with Din and the Malchuta. Okay? And again, as much as this tells me about Yerusha Habat, I think for me this tells you a lot more about the nature of Yerusha in general, and that's why I think it was so important. What we'll do tomorrow is I'll start, and we'll take a day or two on this. Again, I don't want to exhaust you on this. I'll give you some, what do you want me to do? I could just say read, take morning care tomorrow, read as much of Rabbi Jasker's articles as you can. That will give you an overview in English of all the issues, and we'll basically be done with it in one day, and Shalom Al Yisrael. If you want, I can also give you access to some of the Hebrew things, and you can see where it comes from. Or I could say, look, I'll send you Hebrew, I'll send you English, do what you want, but tomorrow's shiur is basically going to be a discussion where we just survey everything. I'll just do that, okay? I'll give you the options of Hebrew sources, but I already sent you the five-part Rabbi Jasker. I want you to walk out and at least understand where it comes from, right? But we'll see some of those, and you'll see the things to look for are the classic solution, which is what's called Shtar Chatzi Zachar, which eventually became Shtar Kulo Zachar. But there are some modern attempts to have unique legal mechanisms that'll help, like an in vivo's trust. So read that tomorrow. Okay, hopefully we'll do this in one day. If it takes 2 days, that's fine. But it really shouldn't if we just want to survey it, okay? Fine. Who had a question? Gavi, you had a question. Yeah.